excited to be back. This is so awesome. God.
I missed everyone, and mostly you, Mary.
I was just doing a little, you know, some reading, prepping for the episode, and it just felt so good, and I was just getting so excited because I knew you were going to have, you know, you always provide so much information, and I feel like each time I'm always like, man, I don't know what Dom's going to bring to the table, but I know it's going to be really informative, really exciting. It's a feeling I've missed for sure.
Oh, Mary, me too. I've missed the feeling of being able to talk about something that I'm so passionate about and being able to talk about it with someone that's also like-minded as well. So, like, a lot has happened since the last time we chatted, Mary.
So much has. I think our last episode was in late last year. So much has happened. So we definitely are going to take a couple minutes. I am so excited about what's going on with you, and I can't wait for you to get to share with everyone the ripples that you're making, the waves that you're creating. So let's just take a couple minutes, and I want you to tell us all the deets of what you've been up to. Go for it.
Okay. So besides of missing you and the podcast and our listeners, I've been really soul searching. And I think that 2020 was that pivot moment for me in my life. Just so much has changed, from my relationship to my workplace to my living situation to just so much of, like, my inner self has been working on, like, therapy. I mean, I don't even know where to begin, but the biggest highlights I feel for me is that I didn't give up on my dreams. I didn't give up on my goals of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to show to the world. And I think out of everything that dismantled in my life in 2020, my business, thrifting, my community, my sustainable community have all shown me what is my true purpose here. Mm-hmm. And it's to better the world and not harm it. And so I feel like, with that being said, I've been really just pursuing me getting my own brick and mortar, really pursuing having a safe and healthy and friendly space for people to not only thrift, but to gather, to come together, to really feel comfortable and not feel not themselves. And so I'd solidified a space in the Hill Country Galleria where I was originally at, but now I have my own 1,200 square feet space.
And it's beautiful. You've been posting sneak peeks of it. It's so you. I think if I had just randomly seen pictures of it, I'd be like, I know that's Thrifted Feels.
Oh my God, Mary, thank you so much. I feel like I've been so exhausted, and, like, don't get me wrong, like, I would be exhausted if I was working for anybody else, but, like, this exhaustion is, like, still so fulfilling. Like, it's so weird. Like, I'm so tired, but I'm happy. Like, I know that this is the work that's going to be for me, you know?
Yeah. Is it that feeling when you get to the end of a day and you're tired, but it's, like, that good tired where you spent all that energy?
Yes. And it wasn't for anybody else. It was for myself. It was for Thrifted Feels. It was for Thrifting Minds podcast. You know, it's for the films, the photo shoots, the things that we do, you know, like, it's more inspiration for me because it's for me and my community. It's not for someone that doesn't know me, a CEO that doesn't know me, or a corporation that doesn't care about my health, that doesn't care about my spiritual and mental and emotional stability. And so I know that I care about those things for myself and for others. So I just pivoted and focused on something that was always constant in my life, which was thrifting and secondhand, and made that something bigger than I expected. So I'm going to be opening up my brick and mortar. And also, it's a love child between my brand, Thrifted Fields, and my friend, Ally, as well, to the Moon Bus. She and I have created this love child business called Gathering Co. And we want our community to come together and think about the things that we buy, think about our neighbors, and think about the earth. So those are the main connections that we have together that we wanted to bring to the world. And so I'm really excited to be a staple in the South area in Austin, and in the Hill Country Galleria was one of the first Black woman-owned businesses. I'm so excited to have that title. I'm not even gonna lie, because it's just remarkable to feel that like you're making a difference, and you're also representing people that look like you.
I am so excited and so proud, and you know, as you said, you're working for yourself. You're the CEO. You own that business. You own that space. Yeah. And so you're not having to worry about, you know, what is the background happening here at my work? Where is these products coming from? You know, who
is this money
going towards? Who is this promoting? Yeah. Who is this helping? You're setting those rules, and you're prioritizing, you know, the community, you're prioritizing the planet, you're prioritizing authenticity and diversity,
you know,
and that's why you're tired at the end of the day, Dom, in the best way right there.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's
Mary.
Beautiful.
Oh my God, Mary, you said it so beautifully. I was over here like,
no,
but you were like, no, I got it. This is what it is. So Mary, that's literally been my meat and potatoes for the past few months. And so I'm excited for it to just lead up to this point. But I mean, other than that, like nothing's been going on with me. I've really been wanting to just catch up with you. Tell me what's been going on with Mary.
You're so sweet. I appreciate your kind words there. You know, I think springtime always feels really transitional to me. I think spring always comes with really unexpected changes. You know, we're coming up on almost exactly a year and just a couple days of our quote unquote shutdown of 2020, you know, and so that has brought a lot of retrospection with that. You know, I'm going back to my old job, which will be undisclosed, and you know, kind of having mixed feelings of, I think for a while during last year, I was feeling like not that I was not growing, that I was not being productive, you know, and now that we're coming up on a year, I think it's starting to sink in that, you know, there were still lessons that were learned last year,
even though, you know, everyone,
yeah, like everyone's plans were completely thrown out of whack. I certainly know mine were, yours were, the podcast. You know, we had big plans.
Oh my God, we had so many plans, Mary.
Yeah.
So many beautiful events. Oh my God. I mean, but who's to say the future may hold more things that we can get involved in for our community. And so go ahead, Mary. I didn't want to interrupt.
No, I love it because that's exactly how I'm feeling. You know, we're going to talk a lot about the winter storm that hit Texas in this episode. And that zapped, I think, you know, I didn't have that much energy before that happened, but that certainly took every last drop of energy I had and more. And I kind of finally feel like it's coming back, and I am feeling now that the vaccine is really getting distributed and getting to people, I'm starting to know more people that are vaccinated. There is hope in that of, you know, there are things happening right now. There is growth. And so that's kind of restoring some energy within me. So yeah, I'm feeling like, you know, it's time to start putting more work in. And I'm excited to be doing the podcast again. And I'm excited to, as you said, Dom, at the top of the episode, just getting to talk about things I really care about and getting to research things, getting to learn from you, getting to grow from our discussions, and share them. And I'm super excited about that. So that's about where I'm at. You know, it's a mixed bag, but mostly feeling optimistic.
I love that. I think, going into 2021, mixed bag is a great reference. We don't know, right? Like, right. 2021 is a mixed bag. We might pull the bag out and get some fresh fruit and we're good, or we might pull out the bag and have a winter storm and not have water or power for weeks. So,
yep.
I feel that one thing that I really wanted to talk about in this episode is about how everything and everyone and how they were affected by this winter Texas storm that hit.
Yeah.
Though it was a storm all over, I mean, I know a lot in the area, but I know for sure for Texans, people that live in Texas, this is so unforgettable. Like, it was something that heightened everyone's emotions and senses and energy and affected so many people. That it's kind of hard not to have this conversation,
Absolutely. And the acknowledgement of the ways that the storm was directly tied to climate change, which is at the crux of all of our discussions. So it would be neglectful to pass over it, not only because it affected Austin, it affected our communities, it affected us so deeply, but also because this is not going to slow down. This is not going to stop happening. This is not a fluke. As so many of our listeners understand the relationship that these storms have to climate change, it still bears discussion. You know, so that's, I think you're exactly right. You know, some of the things that I think are important to address is the way that our infrastructure and our government failed Texans during this storm, and communities had to come together during a pandemic. The pandemic didn't stop during that week, to help each other. And that was so much of what we were seeing. You know, so I think that that would be a good place to discuss, you know, the governmental issues, the issues with ERCOT, and the power of our community at the end of that.
Yes, I agree. I think, I mean, wow, the communication was the weakest thing for me. I feel like in the beginning of this year, we did have a little cold snow, a little snowstorm or whatever it was. It was so beautiful. It was so lighthearted. It was perfect. Yeah. It was like the ideal snow day for Texans. But then, you know, I guess a month later from that time frame, or maybe even a few weeks, like, I honestly did not hear about the snowstorm until maybe like the day before. And
yep, same.
Even then, it was such a light communication. Like, oh, we're going to be fine, Texas. We can handle anything type of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. We're Texas. We can handle anything. No. When I woke up the next day, I mean, I didn't even say wake up the next day. I woke up in the middle of the in like, at 3 a.m. with when it was like 30 something degrees in my apartment. I feel that it was super disrespectful for not only the people in power, our governor, our mayor, all of these people, and even businesses such as, or property people such as apartments and homes and things. I feel that they let Texas down completely. Mm-hmm. I think that dealing with the communication to the people was not even a thing. I feel like even when we were going through the process of like knowing when our water would get cut back on, knowing what the power was going on, knowing about the weather. It was just still a lot of lack of communication and kind of all redundant. I can remember maybe the third day of no water and no heat or shit, no power in general. I felt really scared. I felt like I didn't know how to handle this situation. And the fact that, like, I couldn't rely on my government to have some type of answer for me was kind of scary. And also I was like, okay, then this is when I don't rely on the government, right? Like, this is when I rely on myself, my community, and how I'm able to, like, transition this situation into something that can be useful for myself in the future. Like, for instance, like, certain things that I did not expect that I would pick up so quickly and learn and be innovative to keep myself warm, to keep my family warm, to keep my little doggy warm. I learned a lot of survival skills. I know. I learned a lot of survival skills by having to go through all of this, but I still feel that the communication point was just so horrible and I feel like so many people were affected. I mean, I did not know any of my friends or any of my family members that did not have this issue that was in Texas. Like, I don't know anyone that did not have, you know, power or you know, water. I mean, everyone I knew was affected by this. So it just says a lot, and then it also doesn't say anything. Yeah, you know, like, I think, it says a lot about not being able to rely on the government, and also it tells you to, like, look into your community more.
Absolutely. You know, I think that you put it so well when you said, you know, there wasn't a lot of communication at all. I was in the exact same boat as you. You know, I don't have the Weather Channel on all the time, and I thought maybe it would be similar to the early light snow that we had in January, and then, yeah, I'd woken up and it was, you know, a couple inches. And I grew up in West Texas, where it snows a couple times a year, you know, not a ton. And I, you know, I kind of assumed, okay, you know, I'm not going to leave my house for a couple days, but no big deal. You know, the roads will not be safe to drive on because we don't have snow plows. We don't salt the roads. So I'll just wait a couple days to go anywhere, because that's what I did when I was a kid. But,
right,
you know, we didn't lose power when I was a kid. We didn't lose heat. And all of those things, as you said, you know, those happened. We lost water and heat for a couple days. And as you said, it affected everybody. And I think that's the thing that, you know, to an extent, you are privileged when you have resources and money, of course. Not all of us are Ted Cruz, where we can fly to Cancun. But the understanding, too, is that for how long?
Back.
You know, it does not discriminate. It's kind of like cancer. Like, you might be able to have enough money to get treatment, but there's only so much treatment you can do. There's only so much you can do with climate change that's going to protect you. And so that did result, you know, Texas is such a interesting state to live in, and there's so many things that I really love in Texas, born and raised here. But there's a lot of things that this, I think, brought to light for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And exactly. You know, I think there's a lot of stuff that I think fellow Texans listening to this now know about that we didn't before. You know, like, I didn't really know that much about ERCOT before the storm, but now I know a hell of a lot more about it. I think everyone kind of experienced this from coworkers and relatives that live in colder climates within the country, of having a bit of a misunderstanding of what was going on in Texas. They were like, oh, y'all just are not used to our sort of weather. And that's true. So much so that our government does not even prep for this weather because they don't see the financial reason to do it. They just think, we can skip out on all of those things and it will be okay. You know, and that's kind of what happened. And so, you know, I think that this would be like a good time. I looked a little bit more into the history of ERCOT, which stands for Electric Reliability Council of Texas, as I'm sure many listeners know. So essentially it's our power grid. It just is within our state. And it represents 90% of the state's electric load. Like, that's a huge percentage, you know, so that
that's
means
all like, the percentage.
Right. And so it was actually created, I got a lot of this information from Wikipedia, which I know is not the most reliable source. So of course, you know, hopefully if anybody knows, you know, like, oh, this actually is a little different, please let us know. But it was actually born and, you know, was created in World War II. But it was originally called the Texas Interconnected System, TIS. And it was to support the war effort. So, you know, that says a lot that it was, you know, created to help with World War II. So I think a lot of things that are created to help with a war effort sometimes can be beneficial, but a lot of the times they result in not really actually doing what they're supposed to by helping the people that are using it. So at this time, it was actually interconnected with a couple different states because it was to build materials needed in the war. But then after that, I'm going to just skip ahead. You know, some other things happened in the 70s, but it gets more important is that it starts to deregulate in the 90s. So that means that retail providers and power generators can be unregulated. So we're going to see, you know, what that turns into as these storms hit. So, you know, actually, a lot of people might remember this. In 2011, we had blackouts due to a storm. And that actually resulted in places like El Paso spending many millions of dollars. Dom, you might know this because I know you lived there for a while. Spending millions of dollars for cold weather upgrades after that storm. So actually, El Paso, relatively, was much better. They fared...
They were good. They were on a whole different grid. Yeah, they were set themselves up for success because they realized the severity, not only being a border town, which means imports coming in and out. That means if they shut down the border for more than an hour, you know how many businesses are losing out on things. So imagine that whole blackout for them could have been devastating for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so they learned from that lesson, but are we? Is Texas going to learn from that?
That's such a good question, Dom, because I think what's so frustrating is, I mean, good for El Paso. Why didn't the rest of Texas do that? Texas? What's up with that? And that's a lot of the thing is it's left to these local governments deciding where they're going to allocate their money. You know, so the thing is that ERCOT is not a state agency. It is a private nonprofit corporation. And to our listeners, I'm using air quotes around nonprofit because they are profiting. They are profiting.
Facts.
They are.
If anything private, you gotta wonder what's private going in there. Because those private corporations could be having so many corrupt investments, corrupt investors that could sway their, like that 1%. Can sway people's lives, people's government, people's morals, the people that think that, you know, hey, we should have the basic necessities. But like, just like the storm proven to us, we don't deserve anything. Mother Earth deserves to still live and breathe her life. And we deserve to just try to adapt to what she has going on. But I think this was such a wake-up call for a lot of people, hopefully for, you know, the state of Texas to see that, like, we can't rely on our own politicians to do the things that need to be done.
No. So in 2022, in November, in a year and a half, I hope people remember. And my fear is that, you know, our memories are fickle and people forget. But I hope they don't, and that they vote and not forget, you know.
Oh, of course. Well, at the end of the day, maybe this was just a little warning. We don't know what next year is going to bring. We don't know the next snowstorm. We don't know, you know? Yeah. So, like, is he going to be able to make it through another snowstorm? I doubt it. I doubt it, because he didn't make it through this one, and he wasn't there for, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of Texans. And I really encourage everyone to, I don't know, I feel that the community is always the gatekeeper of, I feel like it's always the gatekeeper of the community. I don't know. I always felt that a lot of people that kind of skipped their way to politician is like money, you know. And I know a lot of people can just go and be like, I'm a politician because I have all of this money to be able to donate or whatever, versus the people that are in the community actually making things work and change and helping others is what I feel should be more visually promoted. I feel a lot of the things that are visually promoted are the politicians doing, like, for instance, Ted Cruz. Okay, wow, you put a cup of water in somebody's trunk.
I did that,
Ted. You put a cup of water in somebody's trunk. Literally, he made a whole, like, he did had a photo shoot of him just putting water in people's trunks. And it's like, that's cool, I guess. Not really, but, like, we need you to do bigger work, because we can put water in people's trunks, but we can't change the grid system.
No. And the fact that we had a representative, AOC, come all the way from New York to come and help us when our own senator abandoned us. And I also want to have a shout out to Greg Kassar, who's one of our city council members. I don't know if you follow him on Instagram, Dom, but he was updating, going live every day, being like, this is where you can get water. This is how you can volunteer to donate water. This is the kind of water we need. These are the other supplies that we need. These are the addresses you can take them to. He was organizing, of course, with a huge team behind him, and getting the word out there. And, you know, that was one of the, the type of organizing that I was seeing. But, you know, he's, as I said, a city council member, but then there were so many nonprofits, so many families, so many individuals that were going out and looking for each other. Everyone I know housed someone, donated, checked on each other. But I do want to say, I reject this turning into one of those news stories of, look at the community. Look at, you know, I read some articles that said, you know, like, this is my Texas. This is the Texas I know. Meaning, you know, we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and we help each other. But why did we have to do that? But why did it have to come to that? And why do y'all reject the idea of socialist? Yeah. We're huge, you know, and I think it's ironic because we are anti, you know, a lot of Texas is red and hugely anti-socialist, but, you know, it's convenient when we have these crises where we have to come together as community. We have to trade. We have to give things freely, where it works out just fine, you know, and it's no problem. So we're actually practicing those things all the time, but it's spun in this way that it's like this Texas pride thing. It should have never come to that. It should have never come to people that were already hurting, giving all they could to each other to get through this storm that was not an individual's fault. That that was a, you know, the result of the long history of Texas being an oil-driven, climate change-denying state for a majority of it. Obviously, not everyone here feels that way, but that is what, you know, brings this sort of thing on. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And I think, personally, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to what the community did for, like, people that are less fortunate than the norm, right? I mean, the homeless in Austin mm-hmm. is already becoming such an epidemic that, like, we cannot not discuss that, right?
Of course.
And
not.
I think for a lot of some of the nonprofits out there, I would expect everybody to be giving out more. I mean, I was expecting, you know, shout out to HEB, because HEB does more than any politician I know in Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, from what they can do, they can give, right? And so I just felt like there was a lack of from a lot of different areas. I think a lot of corporations could have helped. I think a lot of mattress firms could have helped. I felt like there could have been a lot of, first of all the malls were warm. Every mall, every hospital, every shopping outdoor outlet, all of those places was warm. And I just don't understand, had power, had water. In my sense, as a business owner, I would definitely open up my space. Mm-hmm. If it was some, as drastic as it was, like people were literally dying because it was so cold. I literally woke up and it was like, I can't even not remember this because I was like breathing cold ice air out of in my bedroom with 28 degrees of just, I was frozen and I had two covers on and I was in loose clothing. Of course, like how everybody describes it, you know, wear loose clothing, but still layer up, things that are not going to make you sweat. Things that are you know, flowing and breathable. And it was still such a dull pain that you can't even express. So I only can imagine the fact that, like, even though I was in the apartment with 28 degrees, outside it was negative. Outside, homeless people were frozen to the fucking sidewalk, excuse me. People were, I literally saw one dead body. I haven't talked about it because it was something that I was like so traumatized by, but I was walking, me and my sister were walking to grab some food and I didn't believe it. Like someone was just on the ground and I was like, what's going on? Someone, and then like the ambulance comes around the corner and this person is like not alive anymore. You know, like just me trying to like walk to grab water and food in the closest place I could and just to see somebody's body. I mean, on the ground, like, not, you know, and it's just like, this is my community. This is just happening so frequently, not only when it's warm, but the fact that no one prepared it for the homeless, no one prepared this for even the regular civilians. So, like, as much as I was like saddened by my situation, as much as I was in like my own issues, I could not neglect the fact that people were doing worse than me.
Right.
Given the fact that it was mostly homeless community.
Yeah. The weight of that. I can't even imagine because, you know, before the storm, so many people were already struggling. So many people had been evicted from their homes. And the unhoused population was increasing, you know, our neighbors on the street just, I think, we're already having such a tough time in this city. I mean, there's a movement happening, a quote unquote movement, and that word feels generous, happening called Save Austin. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but to kind of just briefly talk about it for our listeners, it's basically this call to end camping under interstates and highways and in parks and across Austin. with no real solution to where, you know, those people are supposed to move to, or any type of humanity that I think to, you know, to help, just more so to erase from the public eye, the unhoused individuals in our city. And they, the very fact that it's called Save Austin, you know, it's worded in a way that's kind of, you know, like I've gotten stuff from them in the mail and I'll be like, what is this? That's, you know, Save Austin from what? I'll open this. And then it's, you know, it's worded in a way that doesn't make it seem as cruel as it is. And we're going to be voting on, you know, on what to do on May 1st. There's some propositions that are going to be proposed. And so, you know, people be looking out for that because, yeah, no one deserves to die like that.
No. And to piggyback off what you're saying is that I signed a petition. It's so funny you're talking about that. There's multiple organizations out there that are trying to come up with a better solution to house our homeless. Some are in that way of Save Austin. They're like, we really want to help the homeless, but don't have a solution. They just want to remove them. Mm-hmm. So I always like to identify with these organizations on really what the hell they're wanting us to sign, or really what they want to do for the homeless, because it sounds like they just doesn't want them on the street, but where else should they go? Because of the fact of the matter is that the one homeless shelter that they did have, they closed it down, and now it's becoming what? A skyscraper for a hotel or an apartment complex. Like, it does not even make sense. And then I also been reading that they're thinking about, and I may be thinking this is something that we're going to vote for, but I don't know. I could be just reading it to my perspective. But I was reading an article, and it was like on Washington Post, and that's crazy because Washington Post is talking about our homeless people like we're LA or something, which we are getting there. I'm not going to lie. I mean, Skid Row is about 54 blocks, and as you know, Austin camping is all over. We got a park south downtown. We got it on the east side. We got it on the west side. We got it. I mean, all over Austin there's camping. So one of the main solutions that I was reading about that people were investing in is that they should take over these motels that are like slowly going into bankruptcy anyway. Like I think I forgot one was like Super 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a Super 8 motel that's like, I mean, honestly, it's pretty nice for people that haven't had a shower or a bed to sleep on. And I honestly think that no one's going to that motel anyway. Like, it's like, why not use Red Roof that's not getting money to use it for the benefit of others and the benefit for the community? And yes, you know, that can seem a little hard to handle because, of course, you know, you have to check up on the rooms, you have this, you have that, you know, a lot of people have mental illness, other people have drug abuse, substance abuse, so I get all of those concerns, but the main concern is treating people with humanity, treating people like they're not, literally, they have more dog care than they have for homeless care, and that's pretty insane to me. I'm just saying, we have a cat bar and a doggy bar, but we don't have something for where our homeless can just go and sit and chill besides the street.
That's such a good point, Dom. And I'm glad you brought up the possibility of using the Austin motels more to help out with our community. You know, and that happened during the storm. Austin Mutual Aid is a nonprofit that was helping, you know, get people to safety, get people to a place where they're not going to freeze to death. And actually, I did deliver water to Super 8 where they were housing people there that didn't have a home. And it works fine, you know? It works just fine. It's fine.
It's not better than the homeless shelter itself. Yes, you want to have visuals on everybody. And yes, you want to be able to know what people are doing. But why not have more mental health professionals and people in these professions to help homeless, you know, counselors, I mean, hell, volunteers. I just don't feel that they use, I feel that they just give up so easily. And when I say they, I say politicians, the people that we give our money to, our taxes to, they give up so easily on our humanity. I mean, even when we, if we can want to talk about a little bit about the storm, I read a quote, it was on Twitter that this mayor resigned and was like, y'all from Colorado City, Texas, wherever that's at. He was like, you know, forget y'all. Like, y'all fend for yourselves. At this point, I'm going to do me because I, you know, I know how to survive. God gave me all of this X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, you're literally telling the people that put you into office to go fuck themselves because you don't have, you don't want to be resourceful. You don't want to help. It's just, it just mind boggles me that, like, you get into power and not use any of it for what it's intended to do. You use it to corrupt, to steal, to multiply for yourself, nothing for the community. And I think what this shown Texas is that it's going to be a major shift once we reelect baby. And that might change all of Texas, honey. We might really flip the script and look at Bethel over here making 102,000 calls, 2,000 calls, 200,000 calls to these old people, seeing if they're, one, alive, two, do they need anything? Three, can we bring you something? Are you medically okay? I mean, it's just, we need people that are going to do, not people that are not going to do. I mean, I just feel that, like, with mutual aid, they came through. Frida Friday, they came through.
Frida Friday!
Safe Austin. Yes, Safe Austin came through. Safe, not Save. Safe Austin is specifically for people homeless, but mostly they specialize in children homelessness. Yeah. But they also feed the homeless as well. So it's just all these organizations that pulled through more and came through better than our government ever would.
You said all of that. I'm not scared to say.
You said that all so, so well, so beautifully. You know, I think that that's a good time to kind of shout out. I mean, you said Frida Friday. I just want to say Frida Friday, for people that don't know, Frida Friday is a very cool collective in Austin. They get together every month. It's a marketplace and a cultural space that supports and promotes self-identified women of color artists to share their handmade and carefully curated art. So they're awesome. They came together and they donated thousands of meals. They got people to drive out and donate meals. They had stations where people could go line up and pick up meals. And I also want to say the restaurants, local Austin restaurants, support local businesses because they will help you. They donated food. They weren't even, you know, some of these places couldn't even open, but they found a way to make food and donate it for free to these nonprofits that were getting it out to people. The two restaurants that I know did this, and I, you know, I'm going to get a much better curated list of the ones that did the, did help their communities, and we're going to post it on our Instagram. But my favorite, Pueblo Viejo, best tacos in Austin. You know what I'm talking about, Dom. And
yes.
They showed up. They showed up, and so did Fly Right, which is a chicken sandwich place. Great substitute for Chick-fil-A or anything else. And they also donated a ton. As I said, there were so many other restaurants that did this. Dom, do you know of some, or do you have any shout-outs for that?
Counterculture, if you like gluten-free and vegan food, they literally had a buffet set out for side for people to come and grab whatever they need I would say 4 days straight. Veracruz Tacos, one of the best, because we can't forget about Pablo, but like Pablo, I always mess that word up, but literally Veracruz and Bolden Creek, I saw that they were also donating all of their leftover foods and stuff like that. I feel like a lot of restaurants came through.
So many. You know, we're going to talk more about this. This is a two-part episode, and this next part, we're going to kind of dive, you know, we're specifically talking about Texas in this episode, but we're going to dive into a little broader discussion of water and our resources in part two. And yeah, you know, I think go to those restaurants for takeout or eat, you know, outside. They're amazing. And also,
yeah.
I think, you know, the last thing that I'll have to say on this, and then I want to hear your, you know, your thoughts, before we wrap up this part one, is that, I really do think, like, we do talk about innovation a lot, and we talk about pushing the envelope of sustainability, of environmental science. Texas could be one of the most sustainable states in the country if we turned away from oil and gas and fracking. If we ironically did turn more towards solar power, wind, things that were in the Green New Deal that, as we know, was actually blamed for the storm, which is highly ironic because I don't actually know how, like, a bill that didn't pass could actually be the cause of a climate change caused storm. But, you know, so I just want to encourage that dream of pushing Texas one step at a time, as fast as we can, as well as we can, towards a brighter, more sustainable future.
I agree, Mary. I think Texas has hell of a potential, and being one of the second biggest populations within the United States, we should do better. We want to claim that we're big and bad, but we look like little punks when we're talking about climate change, when we're talking about, well, we're talking about sexuality, when we're talking about education. We're still the lowest in those brackets. So what are we really big at, Texas? Let's be big with the things that we do. How about that? And I question myself in my future here in Texas. I'm not going to lie. I as a sustainable individual, I want to go where that is at. And I want to be where that's at. And I want to be the most set up for success when it comes to the end of time, when Mother Nature is like, I'm sick of y'all. Y'all killing me. This is what's going to happen. And so I don't want to be in Texas when they still like, I want to be cheap and we're going to let the people figure it out. I want to be where it's figured out. And now all I have to do is do what's implemented for me to be successful. And I hope that with this part one, that all of our listeners understand a Texan's eye on this, that like, yeah, it looked bad, but it was actually really worse. It was like,
yeah,
actually really worse, because not only did we physically feel it, but we emotionally felt it, you know, like we physically felt how Texas felt, but emotionally we realized that the community is bigger than our government, and that says a lot.
I'm not religious, but amen to that.
I think that's a perfect wrap up.
I was preaching a little bit. I thought
it.
I thought I was coming out with the word.
I love it. No, I think that's how we're going to end this part one. That was perfect.
Yes, I agree.
All right.
I love it.
Tune in for part two.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Thrifting Minds. Our podcast is produced and edited by DJ Lucas. Our theme song is by Stefan Osei. And we cannot wait to bring you more inspo for thrifting and fashion on the next episode. Stay tuned.